I have now an exceptional and happy experience. I said a few things, but only a few. This was so because I know that the person that will now appear before you will say much, much more. This is the man who has no peer. In his leadership role, in the fight for a quality of life for our workers, an indefatigable fighter welding the unity of black and white, unity with the Chicano people, and let me hasten to add, Mexican people as a whole, the Puerto Rican people of our land, Asians and Pacific Island people, Native Americans, uniting them with the single goal of defending democracy in the country, because such a defense is needed. And the struggle against the military-industrial complex, against the policies of Reagan in domestic and foreign policy, a fighter who can best explain the need for socialism in our land, and you will be thrilled when you now hear from the General Secretary of the Communist Party, Gus Hall.
It's a great honor to be on this podium here, because you have here the biggest group of top Reds that you're going to see for a long time. Sitting there beside Comrade Angela Davis, somehow or another, the thought came to me what the country would be like and what Washington would be like if in their wisdom the people of the United States had elected us into the presidency. There's a number of things that would obviously be different. Number one, there would not be unemployment in the United States. Because we would have said to the corporations, either operate them or we will operate them. The representative monopoly corporations would have no place in Washington. And races would have a hard time in this country if we were elected a president. Of course, we'd close the offices of the FBI. And of course, we junk CIA. And we'd, I think most of the Pentagon we would take and use it for housing something like that. And we'd have a policy of peace in the world. And we'd have a policy of supporting the revolutionary movement in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Angola, South Africa. And it would be a powerful voice, but unfortunately, but there'll be another time. And for the present, it's a little dreaming, but it'll become a reality one day without question. Dear comrades and friends, at press conferences, radio and press interviews, mass media people have been asking the question, why is the Communist Party meeting in Milwaukee? Our answer is, and why not? Milwaukee is a great working class city with a fine, rich tradition of trade union struggles. It's a state known for its anti-war movements, its militant farmer struggles, and a long history of struggle against racism and discrimination. And Milwaukee is a city with a proud, progressive legacy of socialist ideas and action. So why not Milwaukee? And because of your progressive traditions, it is all the more surprising and even shocking that you now have an Ernest Lacey case, a clear case of racist police murder. It is deplorable that you also have a chief of police who arrogantly defends a law enforcement system saturated with racism, a chief of police who labels all who oppose racist violence as a communist inspired. It is sadly obvious that the ghost of Joe McCarthy and Bull Connor still lingers in the cracks and crevices of Milwaukee's institutions. Our party's meeting here in your working class city to talk about doing something about these terrible times. Our party's meeting here in a national extraordinary conference to take up the emergency crisis problems of today's economic depression. We are here to help each other become better, more effective fighters in the hard struggles ahead against the growing hunger, the brutal, ruthless layoffs, and depression-level joblessness that is pulling apart families and tearing up lives. We are here to talk about our role, our tasks, in helping to build movements against the endless wave of wage cuts, take back contracts, and take away standards of living that is destroying our social security system and eating away at our social welfare programs. We have come to help begin building political barricades for the All People's Fight Back Front, an All People's Front that will stop the Reaganites dead in their tracks and turn back the double-barreled Reagan corporate offensive against the American working class and people. We are here to find new and better ways to halt and freeze the Reagan-Haig Pentagon nuclear madmen before they push us over the nuclear cliff. We are here in Milwaukee to find ways to help put together an all-people's ballot box coalition, an electoral front that will create an anti-Reagan wave powerful enough to defeat every Reaganite who even dares to run in the November elections. These are most extraordinary times because our country has now suffered through and endured the pain of 500 days of Reaganomics and Reaganism. For many, these are the worst days of their lives. Never before have so few caused so much suffering for so many in so short a time. During every workday of these 500 days, some 15,000 workers have picked up their last paycheck and joined the ranks of the laid off, not knowing when and from where the next paycheck will come. We have been living through 500 days, a rip-off Reaganomics, during which our whole system of minimum economic security is being torn apart, cut down, and dismantled. The social security net is being shattered, battered, and gutted. These have been ugly, unjust, going backward days of rising racism. These have been frightening days of moving towards a nuclear ground zero dead end. But on the opposite side of the ledger, they have been 500 days during which the Fortune magazine's top 500 corporations have made the biggest profit killing of any previous period, profit killing that have literally cost the lives and livelihoods of thousands of workers and their families. They have been hundreds of days in which more wealth has been confiscated from the poor and the needy to stuff the wealthy and greedy than ever before. It has been a 500-day obscene, gluttonous, free tax profit orgy for the very rich. They have been days when new names have been added to the millionaires' parasitic coupon clippers club. To sustain just one of these new human leeches, 1 million working people must go hungry and take wage cuts. 1 million children must suffer deprivation, malnutrition, and poverty. It has been 500 days of Ron and Nancy's Royal Palace White House mentality, which is costing the taxpayers millions for fancy china, fancy dresses, fancy million-dollar jet to Barbados vacations, and Blue Room exclusive extravagant dinners to entertain the White House right-wing riffraff and yes-men. It has been 500 days when the Pentagon, Dr. Strangelove's, have been working like mad to spend $1 billion each working day, while every sixth and seventh day they rest. It has been 500 days of broken promises and shattered dreams. It has been 500 days of destroying 50 years of social and economic people's victories. We have lived through 500 days of rip-off interest orgies for the banks and financial galaxies. Their vaults are $500 billion richer, and the people are $500 billion poorer. The 500 days of deregulation and decontrol, tax depreciations and write-offs are adding more billions to corporate coffers. As a direct result of 500 doom days of Reaganism, all the crises are now reaching new catastrophic emergency proportions. These new emergencies are adding a new dimension to the ruinous policies of Reaganism. Today, it is not only a question of fighting for peace in the world. Because of Reagan's nuclear superiority first strike, nuclear madness, it has now become a life and death struggle to preserve the people of the world, to preserve human life on our precious planet. We have been fighting to save Social Security from the Budget Acts, but now under the Reagan Stockman Meat Acts, it has become another life and death struggle of fending off hunger, of saving children from malnutrition and childhood diseases, of saving our schools and public education systems, of saving hospitals, daycare, and medical centers. While the labor movement and the trade unions have been fighting against the takebacks, cutbacks, and wage cuts, now it is much more than that. It has become a fierce battle to preserve our trade unions and the labor contracts themselves, because during the 500 days of anti-working class union busting, the Reaganites have fired, decertified, exiled, ostracized, and banished 11,000 trade unionists because they dared to go on strike. For many years, we have been struggling to preserve the advances made in the area of democratic, civil, and human rights. But today, because of the Reaganite reaction and racism, it has become a question of halting the repeal and cancellation of every law and every enforcement agency set up to fight racism and discrimination in every area of life. It has become a question of halting the dismantling and gutting of the concept of affirmative action programs. While we have been in an ongoing battle to win health and safety regulations, to make our workplaces less of a death trap, to build and expand OSHA, today it has become much more. Today it is a matter of the murder and maiming of workers. It is a matter of mounting death from black and brown lung diseases, from cancer, from silicosis, from tragic mine and factory accidents, all to save money for the criminal, corrupt corporations. Today it is not just a matter of hot lunch programs, libraries and recreation centers for our children, as important as they are. Today is a matter of thousands of youngsters who will be poisoned, crippled, maimed, and murdered from lead poisoning, toxic chemicals, cancellation of immunization program, hunger and malnutrition. We have always had an uphill fight to win decent, low-income housing, lower rents, federally subsidized loans for home mortgages, and rent subsidies. For years, we have been protesting against high fares, unsafe, filthy, and crumbling mass transportation systems. But today, it is literally a question of life and death, as the structure and the fiber of our cities literally are falling apart, become unsafe and unfit for human habitation. Now we are witnessing the decay and the destruction of whole boarded up communities as big corporations close plants, pack up and move out to greener profit pastures, to lower wage areas. Over 500 days, the American people have been the losers in a ruthless Reaganomic corporate offensive. Small business people and farmers have been demanding a fair shake, but now they are going into bankruptcy and foreclosures at unprecedented rates. Instead of negotiating for a nuclear freeze to save our world from a catastrophe, there are secret negotiations on Capitol Hill that will cut even deeper into social services and will freeze social spending at death-dealing cut levels. They are out to freeze people instead of freezing nuclear weapons. For 500 days, everything has been getting steadily worse, while the Reaganites and corporate bigwigs have been repeating prosperity is around the corner. And as Reagan said, the economy is now poised for a recovery. For them, it is prosperity. For the people, it is poverty. And behind every statistic telling us things are getting worse, there are layers upon layers of more statistics proving that they are. But even the most impressive statistics don't bring to the light the full scope and depth of the human suffering, the devastating side effects of Reaganomics. For instance, some of the latest studies indicate that when unemployment goes up just 1%, 4% more men and 2.5% more women become mentally ill. 4 1/10% more people commit suicide. 5 7/10 more are murdered. 4% more wind up in prisons. There is a deadly increase in the stress-related deaths, such as heart attacks. For 500 days, the unemployment figures have been steadily climbing, while our president just keeps repeating, quote, it's tragic, I feel for the poor as he cuts deeper into the unemployment benefits, food stamps, and welfare. For 500 days, we have been living under the war clouds of the Reagan-Hagen foreign policy, bent on nuclear confrontation and first strike superiority over the Soviet Union. For 500 days, we have been subjected to the most vicious big lie, Cold War campaign, designed to convince us that building more and deadlier nuclear bombs will bring peace, that threatening Cuba and the Soviet Union with boycotts and blockades and waving big sticks all over the world will produce peace. During the last few days that you have all followed, we are seeing the new General Haig charades. U.S. even-handedness means that England will get the sheep, Argentina the goats, Standard Oil will get the oil, and Pentagon the airfield in the Malinas Islands. To the degree that the people of the United States have raised their voices for peace against the Reagan policies of nuclear confrontation, to that same degree, for 500 days, Reagan-Hagen Company have been gearing up their big lie propaganda machine. Referring to the Reagan administration's charge that the Soviet Union spends more than the United States on the military, your Wisconsin Senator William Proxmire said, quote, nonsense, balderdash, phony, fake, untrue, inaccurate, end of quotation. I agree with Proxmire, but when he's right, he's right. Those words apply to all variations of the big lie, the so-called Soviet threat. Reagan says, quote, the Soviet Union has 300 missiles with 900 warheads, all aimed at Europe, end of quote. And then he claims they can hit the Mideast and North Africa. And then he added, there is nothing to counter them. Well, this is just another of Reagan's inaccuracies that the press now calls his falsehoods and lies, but a very dangerous one. Everyone knows the truth, that in nuclear submarines alone, the United States has four Poseidons attached to the NATO force with a total of 460 nuclear warheads. Each of these submarines has 600 times as much destructive nuclear force as all the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The British have four of these subs with 192 warheads, and the French submarines have 184 warheads. To this add the U.S. bomber squadron in Europe, equipped with enough deadly nuclear bombs to incinerate the whole world. And on top of all this destructive power, we must add the huge stockpile of U.S. nuclear weapons in Europe. With all this destructive power stockpiled and stored all over Europe, the United States aimed at the Soviet Union. Reagan arrogantly and unashamedly goes before the TV cameras and says, quote, the United States is the world's peacemaker, end of quote. And that, quote, we must not fool ourselves that the Soviet Union will come to the negotiating table bearing gifts, end of quotation. The Reagan administration, if it does get dragged by world opinion to the negotiating table, wants to come not bearing gifts, but with its fingers on a nuclear superiority trigger that could blow up the world many times over. Trying to create the belated image of a compassionate, concerned, peace-loving president, Reagan keeps cooing like a dove of peace while he vigorously pursues the building of the biggest nuclear arsenal in human history. Reagan coos, I am against nuclear war. It cannot be won and must never be fought, end of quotation, as he signs a record-breaking war budget and continues policies of nuclear confrontation and first strike that can only lead to a nuclear war. Because 70 to 80% of the American people are for a nuclear freeze, because Ground Zero is capturing the imagination of millions, Reagan keeps swearing over and over, quote, I am for a nuclear freeze, end of quote, but then adding a cynical footnote. a freeze only after U.S. achieves nuclear superiority, end of quotation. 10 days ago, when he thought President Brezhnev was dying, Reagan flippantly told the press that if the Soviet President Brezhnev comes to the United Nations in June, they should get together for a talk. President Brezhnev responded that he would not attend the UN meeting, but proposed instead the Syria summit meeting in October in Finland or in Switzerland. To this day, the Reagan administration has not agreed to this proposal. And incidentally, this is about the 50th time that the United States mass media has announced that president is either dead or dying. But as in every other case before, Brezhnev has risen again. And pretty close to Easter. The Russian Orthodox Easter. The Soviet Union has already wholeheartedly agreed to the freeze proposal. In fact, the Soviet Union has unilaterally frozen all nuclear activity in the European part of the Soviet Union. This is but another in a series of many steps towards this armament the Soviet Union has taken in the past years. To date, they have made over 100 proposals, concrete proposals, for peace and disarmament. And today, none have received a serious response from the United States. It is becoming crystal clear to most Americans that the only way to end the nuclear arms race and to move towards a nuclear-free world is to unfreeze the Reagan-Hagen-Pentagon policies of nuclear confrontation and first strike. It is also now clear to most Americans that it is necessary to unfreeze the Reagan nuclear war policies so that the hundreds of billions of dollars now spent for war can be unfrozen and used for useful and human needs and projects that will create jobs. The future of human race rests on our victory over the arms race. For 500 days, we have been told we have to tighten our belts and to sacrifice. For 500 days, we have been sacrificing on the altar of private profits and the insane, insatiable military-industrial Pentagon complex. More and more, day after day, people are asking the $500 question. Why does the Reagan administration and Congress relentlessly pursue these cold-blooded, anti-people policies that cause hunger, unemployment, sickness, misery, death, and the constant threat of nuclear war? Do they completely lack human compassion and social consciousness? Why cut funds for the immunization of children to protect them from disease, knowing many will be struck with crippling and killing diseases that were conquered by medical science years ago? Why cut funds for safety inspectors, for OSHA, for health and environmental regulations, knowing that in the 500 days of the Reagan administration alone, so far 190 coal miners have already been murdered in the mines? Why are the oil monopolies permitted to lace our gas, heating, and fuel oil with lead and toxic chemicals, knowing full well that the increased lead and poisons will result in cancer and poisoning of people, especially children, for the next 10, 20, and 30 years? Are they not concerned about our future generations? Why the deliberate gutting of Social Security that cuts the only lifelines of the elderly, ill, and disabled? Have they no concern for our older generations? Why the cuts in wages, food stamps, education, rent, and housing subsidies, Medicaid and Medicare, aid to families with dependent children, CETA, tuition loans, and almost every single program that meets people's needs and strivings for a measure of comfort and security? Why this plan with malice aforethought, inhuman brutality? Is the United States really slipping so far from what used to be the richest country in the world? Is the United States becoming a nation that can no longer even afford to provide a minimum standard of living for its people? Have the United States really run out of resources and money? To all this, we say hogwash. Our U.S. products. Are U.S. products uncompetitive on the world market because U.S. workers are unproductive and lazy? We say more hogwash. The real answers to all these questions lie deep in the very root of the capitalist system itself. The answers lie in the fact that the Reagan administration is the most brutal expression and representative of the corporate drive for maximum private corporate profits at any cost. And while they carry on their unbridled drive for maximum profits, the big business propaganda mill is busy grinding out cock and bull stories about workers accepting huge wage cuts and give back contracts in order to save their jobs and industries. Now the bosses are saying all workers must follow the give back trend set by the United Auto Workers in Ford, General Motors, and American Motors contracts. These contracts are nothing short of a massive ripoff. They are a blue chip stockholder's dream and an auto worker's nightmare. These big business give back contracts will not solve any of the problems. They will not save jobs. In fact, they will have the very opposite effects. The double-barreled Reagan big business offensive has a serious negative cause and effect impact on the economy. Cutting paychecks, unemployment checks, social security checks, and food stamps means less money for buying things. Therefore, it means less sales in the marketplace, and less sales means less production, and less production means less jobs. And the vicious circle begins over again, less paychecks, and so on and so on. With the new Reagan cuts in Social Security, the cut in people's buying power amounts to over $100 billion. The wage cuts and takebacks plus inflation have already cut workers' buying power by another $200 billion. The grand total of $300 billion alone would have bought an awful lot of cars, homes, and groceries, thus creating millions of new jobs. And the double barrel cuts will only deepen even more all of the economic crises. Giving more and more billions stuffing the corporate coffers and pockets of the rich is like pouring gasoline into the carburetor of a car that is already flooded. That's supply side Reaganomics. It just keeps pouring more into the corporate carburetors that are already flooded. The bottom line cause for the economic mess our country is in is the capitalist system itself. We should never forget that. Capitalism is time-worn and worn out. It is overtired, but refuses to give up yet. Capitalism is deep in the process of decay and decline. As with all phenomena, it is the victim of old age and the aging process. In its basic structure, it cannot keep up with the present level of social, technological, and scientific development. The ever-deepening economic, political, social, and moral crises we are going through are not momentary, nor are they the result of even bad management or even inefficient government. They are not the result even of even corrupt politicians, even though it is true they are all culprits. They all play the corporate monopoly game. The truth is, the crisis of capitalism flows from the very nature of its inherently irreconcilable contradiction. And capitalism, no question, is digging its own grave. The decline of capitalism is the product of an inborn, fixed, and law-governed process. In a sense, it is ironic that the United States developments have followed the classical model Karl Marx projected, including high unemployment, widespread poverty, the emergence and rise of huge industrial monopolies, the financial galaxies and conglomerates that now dominate, exploit, and control every phase of life in the United States. In a sense, too, these continuing crises of everyday life are the labor pains and the prelude to the birth of a new society, a new socio-economic system which Marx also envisioned. Our constant guiding point of reference is that the new socio-economic system in the making is socialism. Socialism is a human society in which there are no private corporations, no monopolies, no private profits, no unemployment, no racism, no hunger, no homelessness. Socialism is a society that does away with, once and for all forms of human exploitation through which, for ages, very small privileged minorities have been getting richer and richer by exploiting the labor of the many, the great majority, who get poorer and poorer. Based on the forces and laws of capitalist development, we Marxists are convinced that socialism matches and harmonizes with the new level of social, technological, and scientific development. But since the new world of socialism is not around the corner, unfortunately, at this time, what then are the solutions for us in this old world of ours? First, now more than ever, the key words are action, mobilization, an organization of the mass upsurge into a mighty united fight back all people's front, rooted in the working class and the trade union movement, and all people's front against Reagan, the monopolies, and the Pentagon. We need a more united, a more militant, and a stronger trade union movement at this time. There is an emergency need for a fight back movement that will force Reagan and the monopolies onto the defensive and put the people's movement on the offensive. We need a united fight back that challenges the big business offensive with an all people's counteroffensive. A fight back that demands more jobs, not less. More wages, not less. More unemployment benefits, not less. More social security, not less. More food stamps and social welfare programs, and not less. We need a fight back movement that demands less for the military, less for the corporate fat cats, and a fight back movement that demands more taxes on the rich, not less. We need an all people's united front that can put out the fires of racism being fanned by the racist Reaganite, a fire that continues to scorch our land. We need a united people to win, and we cannot unite without a united fight against racism. We need a unity that can defeat the Reagan big business offensive against all the people, with a special racist cutting edge against Afro-Americans, Puerto Rican, Chicano, Asian American, and Native American people. Racism is ugly, immoral, and unjust. But under Reaganism, every advance, every hard-won victory in civil and human rights is being torn apart, repealed, dismantled, and slashed with a vehemence and ruthlessness unparalleled for years. Because it is a struggle that unites and welds the interests of all of our people into a powerful fighting force that can mount a winning counteroffensive against Reaganomics and the Reaganite racism. Defeating and putting an end to police murder in Milwaukee and racist frame-ups of Comrade Charlene Mitchell and Mike Welch in Gainesville, Georgia, are frontline battles in all the people's war against racism. We need an all-people's front that will fight for full equality for women and win the battle for the Equal Rights Amendment. The very latest, in fact, last week's Reagan scapegoats are the millions of women workers who are looking for jobs. Wearing his asinine grin, he said that the reason the unemployment figures are so high is that unemployed women insisted on applying for jobs. In Reagan's book, if the women would just go back to the kitchen, the unemployment figures would look so much better. We need a people's unemployment front of thousands of grassroots unemployed consuls that can win passage of legislation that will create millions of jobs. We need unemployed consuls and trade unions working together to win an economic bill of rights, a new economic bill of rights that will guarantee every person in our land minimum economic security while unemployed and in the need. We need a youth front that will unite the generations of Americans to fight against the hopelessness and insecurity that comes from joblessness, the military draft, and the threat of nuclear war. We need a people's peace front that will build the biggest, the most powerful peace offensive in U.S. history, a peace front that will put an end to the arms race and save the human race. We need a people's 1982 electoral front that will build a mass electoral tidal wave that will wash right up the banks of the Potomac and make a clean sweep of all the reactionary Reaganites in Congress, powerful enough to steamroller every Reaganite politician out of office and replace them with working-class progressive candidates. We need a new People's Congress in Washington with guts to restore all the anti-people cuts and to cut corporate profits, raise corporate taxes, and slash the military budget. Whenever people unite and organize to fight for their rights, the forces of reaction scream and holler that it is all communist-inspired or controlled by communists. I wish we could take credit for so much inspiration in so many places at one time. Because there is an important lesson in their hysteria. If the forces of reaction and big business are so afraid of a small number of communists, and even worry when there are no communists in organizations and movements, you can imagine how they would respond to the demands of the people if more workers, trade unionists, unemployed, women, farmers, professionals, and students joined the Communist Party. So because there is a crying need for bigger, stronger trade unions, for bigger peace movement, unemployed consuls, youth, women, and senior movement, there is also a need for a bigger, stronger Communist Party. And one of the best ways, and in fact one of the only ways, to make it bigger and stronger is to join it. Trying to promote his concepts of volunteerism and new federalism, Reagan has been promoting, quote, self-help and self-initiative. Now there's one phrase in all his gibberish I can actually agree with, and that's self-initiative. There is one Reaganite scheme we can use to defeat Reaganism. Self-initiative is exactly what we need to organize thousands of unemployed consuls. Self-initiative is what we need to organize precincts and wards and districts electoral committees. Self-initiative is what we need to organize thousands of people's watchdog committees. And we need self-initiative above all to organize the All People's Fight Back Front. Speaking about economic disasters, Reagan tells us, quote, "It's truly tragic, but I don't know any other way," end of quotation. This confession adds up to total bankruptcy. Of course, the best course to take with bankruptcy is to put it into receivership. And the time is fast approaching when the American people will have to put monopoly capitalism itself into the people's receivership. However, an immediate solution is to put Reaganism and the Reaganites into receivership by way of the ballot box, by impeaching them in November. We can start right now to get rid of the Reaganites by impeaching them in the electoral booth come this November. We can wage a ballot box battle that will do in every Reaganite anti-people politician in the country. For 500 days, the backs of the American people have been up against the economic wall. It is fast reaching the point for many where there is no place to go, nowhere to run, nowhere to hide to escape the fallout from Reaganomics. It is across-the-board budget blitz. For new millions, the options are running out. The trickle down never worked, but now even the hope of a trickle is dead. As Secretary of the Treasury Reagan said, the economy does not go up, it does not go down, it just dead in the water, end of quotation. And when it's dead in the water, it stinks. There's no choice now but to get into a fighting stance, to take a stand and to fight back. And the truth is, we don't have to take another 500 days of supply the rich side, rip off the poor Reaganomics. United and determined, strong in struggle, the people can win. We can mount an unbeatable all-people's counteroffensive that will not only halt the Reagan assault, but turn back and turn out every Reaganite in power. We can win back all the take-backs and all the cutbacks. We can literally turn our whole country around by taking our stand now and telling them we've had enough. We won't take it anymore. We are taking our stand. We are going to fight. And we, the people, are going to win. Thank you.